Moogs, caught in the middle. This drill is meant to help the guard practice their telekinesis, not maim them. So the marble-sized ammo being shot out of the walls doesn't travel fast enough to kill the Moogs. Still, it has to sting like hell. Between that and the medicine balls suddenly swinging from the ceiling, I'd say they have their hands full. I dive out of the lectern. A ball bearing smacks me hard in the shoulder before I can make it to the ground. My arm is sore, but I manage to press myself flat, watching as the Moogs are bludgeoned from all angles. Seeing me, Sarah sends one of her guns sliding across the floor. I pick it up and crouch down behind the lectern. Sarah and I have the only two pieces of cover in the room. We open fire. It doesn't matter that we don't have the best aim. The Mogadorians are basically sitting ducks. With all the shooting coming from the walls, they're starting to panic. Many of them are knocked down to their knees by the turrets, or the medicine balls, at which point Sarah and I pick them off. Some make a break for the door. If they manage to stagger that far, all they get for their trouble is a bullet in the back. Only a minute has passed in the lecture hall's training routine before the room has completely cleared of Moogs. The guard usually have to endure 7 minutes before they get a break during the training portion. I guess they don't have anyone shooting real bullets at them, though. I reach up and slap the controls on the lectern until the system shuts down. "That worked!" Sarah yells, sounding almost surprised. "We got them, Sam!" As Sarah stands up, I notice a burn mark on the outside of her left leg. Her jeans are torn. The skin beneath them, a burned pinkish, where it isn't bleeding. "You've been shot!" I exclaim. Sarah looks down. "Crap, I didn't even notice. Must have just grazed me." As the adrenaline dies down, Sarah limps over to me. I put my arm around her for support, and we move as fast as we can out of the lecture hall. We grab more guns on our way out. I tuck a second pistol into the back of my jeans, just in case I run out of ammo. Sarah drops her spent handgun and grabs some crazy-looking lightweight machine gun, the kind of thing I used to believe didn't exist outside of action movies. "You know how to use that thing?" I ask.
"They all work pretty much the same," she replies. "You just point and click."
I could almost laugh if I wasn't so worried about my dad and the comatose John and Ella. We don't hear any sounds of fighting as we pass through the wrecked workshop, picking our way carefully over the junk we knocked over. The penthouse is eerily quiet. I'm not sure if that's a good sign or a bad sign. I poke my head into the hallway. There's no sign of anyone. The floor is covered with Mogadorian ash, but otherwise, all is quiet. The loudest sound is the wind blowing through the building, thanks to the Moogs having broken every single window on their way in.
"Do you think we got them all?"
Sarah whispers. In answer, we hear a shuffling noise from the roof that sounds like boots running across it. There must be more Mogadorians still up there, and they'll be massing for a second wave any second now, as soon as they figure out their first group has failed. "We need to get out of here now," I say, helping Sarah limp along. We hurry down the hallway. Bernie Kosar lumbers into view, still in bear form. He looks wounded, his entire right side smoking from blaster burns. He stares at me, as if he's trying to communicate something. I wish I had John's animal telepathy. He seems sad somehow. Sad, but determined.
"You okay, Bernie?"
Sarah asks. BK grunts and takes the shape of a falcon. He soars towards the window and out, flying up. He must be going to hold off the remaining Moogs on the roof while we evacuate John and Ella. I realize now what that look BK was giving me meant. He was saying goodbye, just in case it's the last we see of him. I suck in a deep breath. "Come on, let's go," I say quietly. There's an overturned bookshelf blocking the doorway to Ella's room. It's peppered with bullet holes. Obviously, this was what my dad used for cover.
"Dad?"
I whisper.
"It's clear. Let's go."
No response.
"Dad?" I say louder, a tremor in my voice. Still nothing. I slam my shoulder hard against the bookshelf, but it's wedged tight. I feel sick, desperate. Why isn't he answering? Up there, Sarah says, pointing. There's a space large enough to crawl through between the bookshelf and the top of the doorframe. I clamber up and over, scraping my knees on the protruding shelves, landing awkwardly on the other side. It only takes seconds, but that's time enough to imagine my dad riddled with blaster fire, John and Ella murdered in their sleep. Dad? My breath catches. It feels like time slows down. I stagger towards the bed, on wobbly legs. Dad? John and Ella look unharmed, and still in their comatose state, completely unaware of the chaos unfolding around them, and completely unaware that my father's body is draped across them. His eyes are closed. He's bleeding from a gaping wound over his abdomen. Both of his hands are clenched there, like he's trying to hold himself together. His spent rifle is discarded on the floor. His bloody handprints running up and down the handle. I wonder how long he kept fighting after he was shot. Sarah gasps as she climbs over the bookshelf.
Oh no, Sam.
I don't know what to do, except take his hand. It's cold. Tears start filling my eyes. I realize that in one of the last conversations I had with my father, I basically called him a traitor.
I'm so sorry,
I whisper. I almost jump out of my skin when my dad squeezes my hand. His eyes are open. I can tell he's having trouble focusing on me, and realize that his glasses are gone, smashed somewhere during the fight.
I protected them as long as I could,
my dad says, his voice strangled, fluid, bubbling up from inside him, and trickling from the corner of his mouth.
Come on, we're getting out of here,
I reply, kneeling down next to him. A shadow of pain crosses his face. He shakes his head.
Not me, Sam. You have to go on your own.
A howl rises above the fighting on the roof. Bernie Kosar, desperate and in agony. Sarah touches my shoulder gently.
Sam, I'm sorry.
We don't have long. I shrug away from Sarah's hand, shaking my head. I glare at my dad, tears now running freely down my cheeks.
No,
I hiss angrily.
You're not leaving me again.
Sarah tries to squeeze past me and drag Ella's body out from beneath him. I don't help. I know I'm being stupid and selfish, but I can't let him go this easily. I've spent my entire life looking for him, and now it's all falling apart.
Sam, go,
he whispers.
Sam,
Sarah pleads, cradling Ella in her arms.
You have to grab John and we have to go.
I stare at him. He nods slowly, more blood spilling out from the side of his mouth.
Go, Sam,
he says. I won't, I say, shaking my head, knowing it's the wrong thing and not caring.
Not unless you come too.
But it's too late anyway. The wire hanging outside the window goes taut as a Mogadorian rappels inside. We've taken too long, and Bernie Kosar wasn't able to stop them. The second wave is upon us.
Chapter 34. Bubbles break the surface of the swamp where Nine is still underwater. He's been pinned down there for almost a minute. I take a step towards the edge, wanting to dive in and save Nine, but not sure if Five will let me. He's watching me closely, an eyebrow raised, like he's wondering how Eight and I will react. Where's the real number Five? Asks Eight, his voice low. What did you do with him? Five's brow furrows in confusion. Then he smiles. Oh, You think I'm Cetricus Raw? Five says, shaking his head. It's cool, Eight. I'm the real deal. No shape-shifting tricks. As if to demonstrate, Five reaches down with his free hand and opens the lock on his chest. He clicks it shut again and glances over at us. See? Eight and I remain frozen in place, not sure what to do. Let Nine out of the water, Five, I say, trying to keep my voice level, as far from panic as possible. In a second, he replies. I want to talk to you two without Six and Nine around to interrupt. Why? Why would you attack us? Eight asks, sounding angry and disbelieving. We're your friends. Five rolls his eyes. You're my species, he replies. That doesn't make us friends. Just let Nine out of the water and we'll talk, I plead. Five sighs and lifts Nine up. He's gasping for air, his eyes fiery and enraged, still trapped in Five's strangling grip. Try as he might, Nine can't find any way loose. Not so strong now, huh? Taunts Five. Okay, deep breath, bro. He dunks Nine back under the water. Meanwhile, Six is unmoving. Her head is cocked at an uncomfortable angle, and a huge bruise is forming along her jaw. Her breath seems shallow. I start towards her, wanting to heal her, but feel Five's telekinesis gently shoving me back. Why are you doing this? I shout at him, tears filling my eyes. He looks almost taken aback when I yell at him. Because you two were nice to me, he says, like it should be obvious. Because unlike Nine and Six, I don't think you've been brainwashed by your Sapons into thinking resistance is the only way forward. Eight, you proved that in India when you let those soldiers die for you. Don't talk to me about that, hisses Eight. I never meant for anyone to get hurt. Brainwashed? I exclaim. Did you say we're brainwashed? It's okay, Five says, placating us. The beloved leader is forgiving. He'll welcome you. There's still time to join the winning team. The winning team? I can't believe what I'm hearing. My stomach turns over. I feel like I'm about to throw up. It can't be true. You're working with them? I'm sorry I lied to you about that, but it was necessary. I'd been on this planet for 6 months when they found me, says Five, sounding wistful. My Sapon was already dead of some vile human disease. That part was true. It just didn't happen when I said. The Mogadorians took me in. They helped me. Once you read the good book, you'll understand that we shouldn't be fighting them. This whole planet, the whole universe can be ours. They did something to you, Five, I say, almost whispering, feeling both sad for Five and horrified by him. It's okay. We can help you. Just let Nine go, adds Eight. We don't want to hurt you. Hurt me? Repeats Five, laughing. That's a good one. He yanks Nine out of the water and hurls his body against the gnarled tree. I try to use my telekinesis to stop Nine's flight, but it happens too quickly, and Five is too powerful. Nine smacks spine first against the trunk with enough force to shake the uppermost branches. He cries out, his body contorted, and I can tell that he's broken some ribs, maybe even his back. Do you have any idea how dull it was pretending to be weak? Five asks, his rubbery arm slithering back to his body, appearing normal again. You were trained by pitiful Sapons, if you're lucky, mucking about with your chests and your legacies always in the dark. I was trained by the most powerful fighting force in the universe, and you're threatening to hurt me?
Pretty much, yeah, replies Eight.
Eight shapeshifts into his 10-armed lion form, towering over Five. But before Eight can go on the attack, Five blows into his flute. The mutant gator, which had been waiting patiently, suddenly leaps into the air and slams into Eight. It's all thrashing wings and snapping jaws, Eight's clawed hands slashing in response. The two mammoth beasts crashing into the mud and rolling over each other. With a mildly entertained look on his face, Five turns to watch Eight scrapping with his pet monster.
Don't hurt each other, Five calls to them. We can all still be friends.
I'm not sure if Five is joking or if he's really that insane. The important part is that he's distracted. Nine moans from the base of the tree. He's trying to push himself upright, but his legs don't seem to be working. Meanwhile, Six isn't moving. I'm not sure which one needs my care more urgently. Six is closer to me, so I scramble over and fall to my knees next to her, pressing my hands to her injured skull. Suddenly, I'm lifted off the ground. My feet dangle in the air. It's Five. He's holding me up using his telekinesis.
Stop!
I yell at him.
Just let me heal her!
Five shakes his head, disappointed. I don't want her healed. She's like Nine. She'll never understand. Don't fight me, Marina. A branch strikes Five in the back of his head. He loses his concentration, and I drop back to the ground. Five whips around just in time to see Nine tearing loose another branch with his telekinesis.
Cute,
Five says, easily deflecting Nine's next volley.
Come on,
growls Nine, who has managed to struggle into a sitting position against the tree.
I don't need my legs to get your fat ass.
Talking shit until the very end, sighs Five. You know what's happening in Chicago right now? Your fancy suite is getting raided by Mogadorians. I want you to die knowing your bullshit palace is burning to the ground, Nine.
You told them about Chicago?
I shout. My shock is real, but when Five glances back at me, I see an opportunity. He likes the sound of his own voice. Well, I can use that to distract him. Nine is in no condition to fight. I need to buy him some time.
How could you do that? What about Ella and the others?
Ella will be fine, Five says. The beloved leader wants her alive.
He wants her alive? For what? I thought he wanted us all dead.
Five merely smiles. He turns back to Nine.
What's he want with her, Five?
I scream, feeling a fresh rush of panic. He ignores me and stalks towards Nine. I hope Nine can withstand him long enough for me to heal Six. I scramble back over to her and hold her head in my lap. Her skull is cracked, her nose and jaw broken. I try to concentrate and channel the icy energy of my legacy. I'm distracted by a feral shriek. Over in the mud, Eight has managed to pin down the monster. Two of its heads are already hanging limp. The middle head is still working, though, and it snaps violently at Eight. He manages to catch the jaws with six of his paws and wrenches its jaws open until they snap apart. The beast's head is practically torn in half. Its monstrous wings thrash once more, and then it finally goes completely still and slowly begins to disintegrate. Five has turned to watch.
Well done, he yells to Eight. But believe me, there's more where that came from.
Eight is left kneeling in the mud, He's back to his normal shape, unable to hold on to the Avatar form for any longer. I can tell he's wounded. Bloody teeth marks up and down his chest and arms, and even on the palms of his hands. He pushed himself hard to defeat that beast, but he still shakily picks himself back up. Five looms over nine, his steel skin glinting in the fading sunlight. Nine sneers up at him defiantly. "You going to hit an unarmed man, you traitorous shit?" Before Five can reply, Nine reaches out with his telekinesis, his pipe staff, which he must have dropped when Five first grabbed him, lifts out of the muck and comes zipping towards him. Five snatches the staff out of the air. I make a mental note that he catches the staff with his right hand, which means the stones he's using to power his legacy must be clutched in his left. Five raises the staff and brings it down across his metallic knee, snapping it in half like a piece of kindling. "Yeah, I am." Before Five can move, Eight teleports between them. He's hunched over, breathing heavily and bleeding from multiple wounds. Even so, he stands his ground. "Stop this madness, Five." I'm trying to keep an eye on the scene playing out next to the tree while also concentrating on Six. I can feel her skull starting to mend, the swelling on her face decreasing. I hope that I'm working fast enough. We need her badly. "Come on, Six," I whisper. "Wake up." Five has hesitated with Eight in front of him, some of the anger directed at Nine going out of him. "Get out of the way, Eight. My offer to you still stands, but only if you let me finish this loudmouth moron off."
"Let him take a shot, dude,"
Nine shouts from the ground.
"Shut up,"
Eight snaps over his shoulder. He holds his hands up to Five. "You're not thinking straight, Five. They've done something to you. In your heart, you know this isn't right." Five scoffs.
"You want to talk about right?
What's right about sending a bunch of children to a strange planet so they can fight a war they don't even understand? What's right about giving those children numbers instead of names? It's sick."
"So is invading another planet," counters Eight. "Wiping out an entire people." "No! You understand so little," Five replies, laughing. "The Great Expansion had to happen."
"Genocide had to happen? That's insane." Six stirs in my lap. She's not awake yet, but it seems like the healing has worked. I set her down gently and stand up, creeping closer to the others. Five doesn't notice me. He's ranting now, sounding almost frantic.
"You fight because your Sapons told you that's what your elders want. Have you ever questioned why? Or who your elders really are? No, of course not. You just take orders from dead old men and never question them.
And I'm insane?"
"Yeah," growls Nine. "Are you even listening to yourself, bro?"
"You're confused. You've been their prisoner for years without even realizing it. Just calm down, and we can discuss this," says Eight.
"We shouldn't be fighting."
But Five isn't listening to Eight anymore. I thought he might have a chance of getting through to Five, but that last comment by Nine was enough to set him off again. Five drops his shoulder and attempts to barrel right through Eight. I grab Five's left hand with my telekinesis, focusing on prying open his fingers so he'll drop those balls. He jerks away from Eight, surprised, struggling against me.
"His left hand!" I yell. "Help me get it open!"
I can tell by the looks on their faces that Eight and Nine have gotten the idea. Five screams in pain and frustration.
I almost feel bad for a moment. We're just ganging up on him again. This must be what he's felt like since he joined us. An outsider. He's lost and confused and angry. But we can worry about mending fences and fixing his screwed-up worldview later. Right now, he needs to be stopped. "Please don't fight us," I cry. "You're just making it worse." Five screams again as his knuckles crack loudly. The small bones in his hand are probably shattered from our combined telekinetic assault. The two balls he was holding drop to the ground and roll beneath the roots of the tree. Five clutches his hand and drops down to his knees. He's looking at me, like he knows I was the first one to attack his hand, and it makes this defeat all the more bitter. "It's going to be all right," I tell him, but my words sound hollow. I'm trying to talk him down, but when I look at him, I get the same feeling of revulsion that I do with the Moogs. He was going to kill Nine. One of his own people. One of us. How can we bring him back from that? Eight steps forward and puts a hand on Five's shoulder. It seems like the fight has gone out of him. Five sobs, shaking his head. "It wasn't supposed to go like this," he says quietly. "Crying like a girl," Nine says. Immediately, Five's expression darkens. Before we can stop him, he shoves Eight away from him. Eight stumbles, falls, and Five takes flight. "Don't!" I scream. But Five is already shooting towards Nine. The wrist-mounted blade he grabbed from his chest extends with a harsh screech of metal. It's a foot long and needle-shaped, deadly and precise. Nine tries to roll aside, but he's hurt badly and can't move. The grass around Nine is flattened to the ground, and I realize that Five is holding him in place with telekinesis. I try to use my telekinesis to pull Nine towards me, but he doesn't budge. Five's telekinetic grip is too powerful. It all happens so fast. Five plummets down with blade extended. Nine, teeth gritted, unable to move, watches the fatal blow descend. Suddenly, Eight appears in front of Nine. He's teleported.
"No!"
Nine screams. Five's blade drives right into Eight's heart. Five lurches backwards, shocked, as he realizes what he's done. Eight's eyes are wide, a spot of blood forming on his chest. He staggers away from Five, towards me, his hands outstretched. He tries to say something, but no words come out. He collapses. I scream as the fresh scar burns across my ankle.
Chapter 35. I walk through a decimated city. I'm right in the middle of the road, but there isn't any traffic. Totaled cars are piled up on the sidewalks. Many of them just burned out shells. The buildings nearby, the ones still standing anyway, are crumbling and covered in scorch marks. My sneakers crunch across a blanket of broken glass. The city isn't familiar to me. It isn't Chicago. I'm somewhere else. How did I get here? The last thing I remember is Ella grabbing my arm and then this place. An acrid burning smell fills the air, inescapable. My eyes burn from the clouds of ash blown through the empty streets. I can hear crackling in the distance. Somewhere, a fire is still burning. I keep moving forward through the deserted war zone. At first, I don't think there are any people. Then I notice a handful of filthy men and women huddled inside the gutted remains of an apartment complex. They stand around a burning trash barrel, warming themselves. I raise my hand in greeting and shout, "Hey, what happened here?" Seeing me, the humans shrink back. They're frightened, one by one disappearing into the shadows of the building. I guess I'd be wary of strangers, too, if I'd lived through whatever happened here. I keep moving. The wind howls through the broken windows and sagging doorways. My ears perk up. If I strain to listen, I can almost hear a voice carried on the wind.
"John, help me, John."
The voice is thin and distant, but I still recognize it. Ella. I realize where I am. Well, not where I am geographically, but where my mind is. Somehow I've been pulled into Ella's nightmare. It feels so real. But then, so did those horrible taunting visions that Cetricus Ra used to inflict on me. I close my eyes, focus, and try to force myself awake. It doesn't work. When I open my eyes, I'm still standing in this broken city. "Ella," I say, feeling a little silly speaking to the thin air. "Where are you? How do we get out of here?" There's no response. A torn piece of newspaper blows across my path and I reach down to snatch it. It's the front page of the Washington Post, so that must be where I am. The paper is dated a few years from now. This is a vision of the future, and it's one that I hope never comes to pass. I remind myself that this is how Cetricus Ra toys with us. Everything here is his creation. Even knowing that, the picture on the front page causes my breath to catch. An armada of Mogadorian ships emerges from a cloudy Washington sky, hovering right over the White House. The headline is just one word, in bold capital letters. Invasion. I hear a rumbling sound from ahead of me. Toss the newspaper away and start jogging towards it. A dark military truck crosses through the intersection, moving slowly, flanked on all sides by Mogadorians. I quickly come to a stop and consider ducking into one of the nearby alleys for safety. But the Mogs don't seem to notice me. A crowd of people shuffles along behind the truck. They're humans, gaunt and pale, their clothes torn rags. All of them look dirty and hungry, many of them wounded. They walk along with their heads down, their faces grim, marching sullenly. Mogadorian warriors armed with cannons walk alongside them, the dark tattoos that cover their scalps displayed proudly. Unlike the humans, the Mogs are all smiling. Something is happening. An event of some kind. One that the Mogadorians want the humans to witness. The wind picks up again.
"John, this way."
I slip into the crowd and walk along with the humans, keeping my head bowed. I steal an occasional glance around. The Washington Monument protrudes jaggedly on the horizon, the top half of it sheared off. A feeling of dread fills my stomach. This is what the future will look like if we fail. The crowd is led to the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. There are other people already there, waiting for this sick Mogadorian sideshow to begin. The American flags that would normally hang above the memorial have been taken down, replaced by black flags bearing a red Mogadorian symbol. Even worse are the chunks of stone piled along the sides of the road. Well, I think they're stones at first. On closer inspection, I make out the chiseled face of Lincoln, a huge crack running down the center of his forehead. The Mogadorians have broken down the statue and tossed it out of the memorial. I push my way to the front of the crowd. None of the humans seem all that eager to be at the front, so they let me through without a problem. A line of Moog warriors stands at the base of the steps, keeping watch on these dispirited people, their cannons pointed into the crowd. Cetricus Ra lounges in a throne at the top of the Lincoln Memorial. His massive frame is clad in a black uniform, covered in epaulets and medals. A huge Mogadorian sword, protected by an ornamental scabbard, is laid across his lap. 7 lauric pendants hang from around his neck, their cobalt surfaces shimmering in the afternoon light. His black eyes idly scan the crowd. They pass right over me, and I flinch, ready to run. But he doesn't seem to notice me.
John, do you see me?
I have to stifle a gasp. Ella is seated in a smaller throne next to Cetricus Ra. She looks older and paler. Her hair is dyed jet black and bound in a tight braid worn down her shoulder. She's wearing a dress so elegant that it almost seems meant to taunt the tattered humans that stare at her in awe. Her face is stony, like she's long become immune to grim scenes like this one. Cetricus Ra holds her hand. I fight back the urge to rush up the steps and try to kill him, reminding myself that none of this is real. And anyway, even if it was, I wouldn't stand a chance. An entire army of Mogadorians stands between me and Cetricus Ra. The crowd parts to let the military truck I saw before pull up to the Lincoln Memorial steps. The back of the truck is open, and I can see 2 prisoners huddled inside, their heads down and hands shackled. There's something familiar about them. Cetricus Ra stands up when the truck parks. A hush falls across the crowd.
"Bring them forward!" he shouts.
A stout Mogadorian warrior steps out of the ranks. He's not like the others. He's not so pale, and the dark tattoos across his scalp seem almost new. He wears a patch over one eye, and his working eye isn't the soulless black of a Mogadorian. I take an involuntary step backwards as I realize that I'm not looking at a Mogadorian at all. It's 5. What the hell is going on here? Why is he wearing their uniform? 5 leads the first prisoner down from the back of the truck. He's a little older, and there's a long scar running horizontal across his nose and cheeks, but I still immediately recognize Sam. He keeps his head down, not making eye contact with 5, looking haunted and defeated. I notice Sam has a bad limp that becomes all the more apparent when he's forced to climb the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. He stumbles, almost falls, and some of the Mogadorian onlookers chuckle at the humiliating display. I feel rage bubbling up inside me, and have to take a deep breath as I feel my lumen starting to activate. The second prisoner doesn't go as meekly as Sam. Even with her hands and feet shackled, 6 stands tall. Her blonde hair has been shorn into boyish spikes, and her face is contorted into a perpetual mask of anger. Yet she's still strikingly beautiful. She sweeps her eyes across the crowd of humans, and many of them look down in response, ashamed. 5 says something to her that I can't hear, but his soft features are almost apologetic. In response, 6 spits in his face. As 5 wipes the spit off his cheek, a group of Mogadorian guards grab 6 and drag her up the steps. She's a fighter until the very end. 6 and Sam are made to kneel before Cetricus Ra. He glowers at them for a moment, then turns to address the crowd.
"Behold!"
he shouts, his voice carrying above the silent masses.
"The last of the Lauric Resistance! Today, our society celebrates a great victory over those who would stand in the way of Mogadorian progress!"
The Moogs all cheer. The humans stay quiet. My mind is racing. If Six and Sam are the last remaining, then that means, in this future, I'm already dead, and so are all the others. Those pendants dangling from Cetricus Ra's neck? One of those is mine. I remind myself again that none of this is real, but I feel terrified all the same. Five walks up the steps and stands beside Cetricus Ra. He holds the ornamental sheath as Cetricus pulls free his glowing broadsword. Cetricus brandishes the sword for all to see, then takes a practice swing just above Sam's head. Someone in the crowd screams and is quickly silenced.
Today, we cement a lasting peace between humans and Mogadorians, continues Cetricus. At last, we will finally stamp out the final threat to our glorious existence.
This sure doesn't look glorious. The humans have clearly been beaten down over months and months of Mogadorian occupation. I wonder how many would join me if I tried to charge Cetricus Ra. Probably none. I don't feel angry at them, but angry at myself. I should have saved them. Should have prepared them better for what's coming. Cetricus isn't done giving his speech.
On this historic day, I have chosen to bestow the honor of sentencing to she who will one day succeed me as your beloved leader.
With a grand gesture, Cetricus Ra motions to Ella.
Ea, how do you rule?
Heir? That doesn't make any sense. Ella isn't a Mogadorian, she's one of us. I don't have time to figure out what this all means. I watch as Ella rises shakily from her throne, seeming almost drugged. She stares down at Six and Sam, her eyes dark and impassive. Then she gazes into the crowd, her eyes settling on me.
Execute them, Ella says.
Very well,
Cetricus replies. He bows deeply, and then, in one fluid motion, chops off Six's head with his sword. The crowd is deathly silent as her body topples over. So quiet that I can hear Sam screaming. He falls across Six's body, crying and yelling. I feel the searing pain on my ankle. A new scar is forming. I close my eyes as Five lifts up Sam, turning him toward Cetricus Ra's blade. I don't want to see what happens next. How badly I've failed them all. It's not real, I repeat to myself. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real.
Chapter 36. I know he's gone. I can still feel the lingering pain from the new scar on my leg. I might never stop feeling that. It could be with me for the rest of my life. I have to try. I fall to my knees in the mud next to Eight's body. The wound doesn't even look so bad. There's not as much blood as there was in New Mexico. And Eight lived through that. I should be able to heal this, right? It should work. It has to work. But this one is right on his heart. Straight through. I press my hands across the puncture and will my legacy to kick in. I did it before. I can do it again. I have to. Nothing happens. I feel cold all over, but it's not the iciness of my legacy. I wish I could lie down next to Eight, here in the muck, and just shut out everything that's going on around me. I'm not even crying. It's like the tears have gone out of me and I just feel hollow. Just a few yards away, Five is shouting, but my mind can't process what he's saying. The blade he used to stab Eight has retracted back into its wrist-mounted sheath. His hands are on his head, like he can't believe what he's just done. At the base of the tree, Nine has fallen silent, in a state of shock. If only he'd shut up moments ago and not egged Five on. Six is finally struggling back to her feet, looking groggy, trying to make sense of the new scar on her ankle. Everything has fallen apart.
It was an accident,
Five is babbling.
I didn't mean to do that, Marina. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
Be quiet, I hiss. That's when I hear the dreaded hum of a Mogadorian ship's engine. The tall grass around us begins blowing wildly as a sleek silver vessel starts descending from the sky. This was all just a setup, orchestrated by Five. So of course he'd have backup waiting in the wings. I lean over and touch a gentle kiss to Eight's cheek. I want to say something, to tell him what an amazing person he was, how much better he made this terrifying life we're forced to lead. I'll never forget you, I whisper. I feel a hand on my shoulder. I whip around to find Five standing over me. It doesn't have to be this way, he's saying, pleading with me. This was a horrible mistake, I know that. But everything I said is the truth. He's insane. Insane to touch me. I can't believe he'd even have the audacity to do that after what he just did. Shut up, I warn him. You can't win, Marina, he continues. You're better off joining me. Five stammers as his breath mists in front of his mouth. The humidity around us cut by a sudden chill. His teeth chatter.
What are you doing?
Something in me snaps. I've never felt anger like this before, and it's almost comforting. The icy feeling of my healing legacy spreads through me, but it's different somehow, freezing and bitter and dead. I'm radiating cold. Near Five and me, the murky swamp water crackles as the surface turns instantly to ice. The plants within my radius begin to wither, drooping under the flash freeze.
Marina? Stop!
Five, hugging himself to keep warm, takes a step away from me. His feet nearly go out from under him as he slips on the ice. With this new legacy coursing through me, I act on pure, furious instinct. I jerk my hand upwards, and the ice takes shape beneath Five, a jagged icicle forming from the ground and thrusting upwards. He's not quick enough to get out of the way, and the icicle stabs straight through his foot, pinning him to that spot. Five screams. But I don't care. Five pitches forward and grabs at his impaled foot, just as another icicle juts up from the ground. It strikes Five right in the face. If it was any larger, it would have probably killed him. Instead, it merely takes out one of his eyes. Five falls to the frozen ground awkwardly, his foot still impaled. He clutches at his face, screaming,
"Stop it! Please stop it!"
He's a monster, and he deserves this. But no, I can't do it. I'm not like him. I won't kill one of my own people in cold blood, even after what he's done.
Marina!
Six shouts.
Come on!
The Mogadorian ship has landed, and its doors are opening. Over by the tree, its branches now sagging under a weight of fresh ice. Six has thrown Nine over her shoulder. She holds her hand out to me. I take one last look at Five. He holds both his hands over his face, grasping at his ruined eye. He's crying, the tears turning to frost on his cheeks.
"If I see you again, you traitorous bastard," I yell. "I'll take the other fucking eye."
Five makes a weak, gurgling sound. Pathetic. I'm about to run to Six, but stop. At my feet, encased in a solid chunk of ice, is Eight's body. As I realize what I've done, the air around me begins to warm up. I kneel down and press my hands to the sheet of melting ice that separates me from Eight. I want to take him with us, to keep him away from the Mogadorians and lay him to rest like he deserves, but there's no time to wait for the ice to melt. Six is shouting at me, and the Mogs are closing in.
"I'm sorry," I whisper, feeling numb all over.
I race over to Six and grab her outstretched hand. We turn invisible.
Chapter 37. I snap awake and sit up ramrod straight in a bed that isn't my own. I know immediately that I'm back in reality, the searing pain of a new scar burning into my ankle enough to wake me up. But wait, that nightmare wasn't supposed to be real. I shouldn't have actually gotten a scar, and yet I can feel the burned skin stinging and raw, the pain more than skin deep. That part of the nightmare was real. We've lost someone. I don't have time to think things through, barely even time to assess my situation. Sam is shouting at me, "John, get down!" There's a Mogadorian standing in front of the bedroom window, a broken window, cold air blowing in from outside. When did that happen? He's aiming a cannon at me. My instincts take over, and I roll to my left just as the Moog shoots the space where seconds ago I was comatose. From the floor next to the bed, I shove the Moog with my telekinesis. He flies backwards, out the window and into the empty air, and plummets to the street below. It's bedlam. The chaos in the real world more intense than in Cetricus Ra's vivid nightmare. The bedroom has been completely torn apart by blaster fire. Sarah is standing in the doorway, using a broken bookshelf for cover. With one arm, she cradles Ella's still unconscious body, and with the other, she haphazardly sprays machine gun fire into the hallway. Beneath the gunfire, with my enhanced hearing, I can hear Mogadorians swarming through the penthouse. There's so many of them. Yet for some reason, it doesn't seem like Sarah's taking any return fire. It's because she's holding Ella, I realize. Cetricus Ra wants... I can't believe I'm even thinking this. Haven't even had time to process what it means. His heir brought in alive. That's why the Moogs aren't shooting at Sarah. They're afraid to hit Ella. Sam is on the floor next to me. He's cradling Malcolm, who has a massive blaster wound in his midsection. His breathing is shallow, and he's barely conscious. It doesn't look like he has long left. "What the hell happened here?" I shout to Sam. "They found us," Sam replies. "Someone betrayed us." I remember Five in that Mogadorian uniform and I immediately know the truth. "Where's everybody else?" "They went to the Everglades for the mission." Sam points at my leg, his eyes wide and frightened. "I saw your ankle light up. What does that mean?" Before I can answer, I hear Sarah scream. Her gun is making an empty clicking sound and... realizing that she's empty, the Moogs have descended on her. One of them reaches through the doorway and buries a dagger deep into her shoulder. She falls to the ground, grasping her shoulder, as another Moog reaches in and yanks Ella violently from Sarah's arms. I light up my lumen, but it's too dangerous to launch a fireball while the Moogs are holding Ella. They're out of range quickly, disappearing down the hallway in retreat. I reach out with my telekinesis and drag Sarah over to us. "Are you all right?" I ask, quickly looking over the wound in her shoulder. It looks bad, but not fatal. Sarah looks stunned and relieved to see me awake.
"John?"
she exclaims, and yanks me in close with her good arm. It's not even a half-second hug, Sarah shoving me away, realizing the danger.
"Go, you have to stop them."
I leaped to my feet, ready to tear off after the retreating Mogadorians. I stopped myself, looking down at Sam and his father. Malcolm is still alive, but fading fast. The way Sam crouches over him, holding his hand, it reminds me of that night at Paradise High School, when I was powerless to stop Henri from dying. I could save him, I realize. Healing Malcolm would mean letting the Moogs escape with Ella, though. It would bring Cetricus Rock closer to what he wants, a future that I still don't entirely understand, but one where Ella rules over humanity alongside him. Sam looks up at me, his cheeks wet with tears.
John, what are you waiting for? Go help Ella!
I think of that Sam I saw in the nightmare, how tired and beaten down he looked, his spirit gone out of him. I think of how badly it hurt me to lose Henri. I can't let my friend go through all that, not after he and Malcolm have just found each other again. Letting Ella go? The future I could be dooming her to? No, there'll be time to stop that later, I tell myself. I have to help Malcolm now. I kneel back down and press my hands to Malcolm's stomach, and his wound begins to close slowly beneath my touch. Finally, some color begins to return to Malcolm's face and his eyes open. Sam is staring at me.
You let them take her.
I made a choice, I reply. They won't hurt her.
How can you know that?
Sarah asks.
Because Ella? I shake my head.
We'll save her. We will stop them, all of us, together, I swear. Sam grabs my shoulder.
Thank you, John.
As soon as I'm finished with Malcolm, I turn my attention to healing Sarah. The wound in her shoulder is clean. She brushes her fingers against my cheek while my legacy is working.
What happened to you?
She asks.
What did you see?
I shake my head, not wanting to talk about the vision until I've really had time to figure out what's happened. Unlike Sam, I don't think Sarah noticed the new scar appear on my ankle, and I don't want to bring that up either. It's quiet now. The Moogs have retreated with Ella, but we still need to get out of here. There's no way the cops miss this battle. I just want to get Sarah healed and all of us somewhere safe.
Looks like you kicked some ass while I was out, I say.
We did our best, she replies.
Sarah's wound all healed up. I glance around. We need to move. Where's BK? I see Sarah and Sam exchange a grim look. My heart drops.
He went to the roof to hold them off, Sam says. He didn't come back.
He's tough. He could still be alive, Sarah says.
Yeah, definitely, Sam replies,
but he doesn't sound confident. Thinking about BK and whichever one of the guard is dead in the Everglades almost makes me break down. I bite down hard on the inside of my cheek and focus on the pain. I stand up. There will be time for mourning later. Right now we need to get out of here before the Moogs decide to come back and kill us.
Time to go,
I say, helping Malcolm to his feet.
Thank you for saving my life, John,
he says.
Now, let's get the hell out of this place.
The four of us rush out of the bedroom with Sam helping Malcolm along. The lights have all gone out, a circuit probably blown during the fighting. There aren't any Mogadorians waiting for us in the living room, but I can see by the destruction that they've definitely done some redecorating. For a moment, I imagine how mad Nine will be when he gets back, if he's even alive. And then I realize that we're never going to be able to come back to this place. It was a good home for a while, but now it's gone. Destroyed, like so much else by the Mogadorians. Through the shattered windows, I can hear sirens wailing from the street below. This attack by the Mogadorians was way more brazen than usual. It's probably going to be pretty hard to sneak out undetected. Amazingly, the penthouse elevator is still operational. I hustle Sarah, Sam, and Malcolm inside and hit the button for the parking garage. But I don't get in the elevator.
What are you doing?
Sarah cries, grabbing my arm. We won't be able to come back here. It's going to be crawling with cops and probably the feds that work for the Moogs. I have to get our chests and see if I can find BK. Sam steps forward.
I can help you.
No, I reply. Go with Sarah and your dad. With my telekinesis, I can carry them myself.
You'd promised we'd stay together,
Sarah says, her voice shaky.